It's a public call, so just stay off names and places. Do you want to start off by reading your message? How would you like to start?
I'm sorry, I don't quite have anything prepared. Well, I do, but it was more just generally the talk itself. I guess I could start at the beginning, if that's all right with you.
The beginning is a good place.
Okay. Well, my first memory was when I was about 3 years old. And I remember my little brother coming home from the, and he was a pituitary dwarf. Multiple things were wrong with him. He was not able to walk or talk throughout his life. And so that was my first memory, was holding him in my arms. And as a three-year-old boy, just thinking, you know, this is just how life is. So that's my first memory. And throughout my childhood, it was one of mostly isolation because my mother was preoccupied with taking care of my little brother. And my father would just come home and from work and drink beer and watch TV and then go to sleep. And so I pretty much lived my entire childhood in pretty much isolation. All my childhood friends, when I think back to them, I don't quite have like a emotional connection to them. We kind of seem to have just been passing the time, it seems. But and then that's just been the kind of general motif of my whole life, is one of just isolation. But yeah. So did you get all that, I suppose?
Yeah, sorry. I never know when people are finished when we're just starting to talk. Okay. And how old are you now?
I'm in my early 30s.
Okay. And tell me what you mean by isolation.
Just like playing video games, reading books, being on the internet, which was not appropriate for that age. I actually stumbled upon explicit images at a very early age, which I... my adult brain, looking back on that, I should not have been on the internet.
What age?
Probably about six.
Oh my God. Okay. Wow. Go ahead.
And so, you know, things were mostly fine in the first city that I grew up in, but at the age of 10, you know, cause I had, even though my friends were kind of superficial, I did feel some sort of camaraderie with them to some degree. And when I moved to the new city, that's where I got not nice. I remember like approaching kids and wanting to be their friends and just getting like a zombie stare from them. Pretty much, for whatever reason, everyone in the city was like that. So that made the isolation even worse, because now I don't even have, you know, superficial friends, nothing. Just go to government school, learn nothing, just erase 7 hours of my day, go home. No, I guess play video games, read books. And, you know, it was one day, in fifth grade. And somehow this, like, whole idea escaped me the whole time. I was a kid. I was sitting there during a little math course in fifth grade. And I actually intuited the concept of my own death. And that was very disturbing. and the fact that I had nobody to talk to that with. I don't even know. It's very bizarre. Sorry, I know. I watched.
Sorry, what's bizarre about understanding that you're going to die?
Well, it is. It just.
I'm sorry. Your internet is kind of cutting out. Are you close to the router? How are you getting your data?
Through my down by the window. I'm just like pacing.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty bad if it can't even do audio. So I just need you to stay where you've got some good bars or good signal.
You got it.
Okay, so sorry, I was just asking what was odd about figuring out that you were going to die. It's not a crazy age, right?
Well, for me, it was kind of just intuiting it. And then also with that, not having anyone to talk to that with, because my parents are pretty absent. They taught me virtually nothing. The only thing I can actually tell you, the two things both my parents taught me. My mom started to teach me how to tie my shoes, but stopped halfway through when I didn't catch on quick enough. My sister had to come in and finish the job. And my dad, he taught me how to fix irrigation systems.
Sorry, he taught you what irrigation systems?
Taught me how to fix irrigation
systems. Sorry, you're cutting out again. He taught you how to fix irrigation systems?
Yes.
Okay. Go on.
And so not having anyone to talk to that with, and then being in government school, the teachers don't care. Nobody there cares. No friends. So it was just, I was all alone with it. And I suppose maybe that's how a lot of people are, but this will come into play later on too. So I pretty much have had to intuit everything in my life. Because the other thing too, what follows is I intuited the idea of suicide, or the idea, yeah, just the idea of like self-termination at a very early age. And it was just really rough. And just like having no one to talk to that about. When I think back to it, it's just kind of indescribable.
Well, I'm certainly sorry about all of that. That sounds very tough. I mean, did your brother stay with you?
My little brother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Again, I need you to get better data. We can't have the call if you keep cutting out.
Let me try. I'm on speakerphone. Let me try.
No, speakerphone doesn't have anything to do with it usually. I mean, you can certainly try the other way, but usually it's just data. But okay, yeah, try the, if you got a headset, even better.
Is that better?
Yeah, I think we're okay. Are you back?
Okay. Yes, I'm back.
Okay. So my question was, why was your brother not put into a home or something like that? Because it seems almost impossible to parent if you have a child who can't walk or speak. And I assume did he have cognitive deficiencies as well?
No, thank God he did not.
Oh, okay. Okay, so he was not massive management, obviously some, but not like you have to figure out how to brush his teeth and wipe his butt and things like that, right?
Oh, no, that was the case.
Okay, got it.
His body did not function correctly, but his mind did.
Okay, got it. Okay, so why do you think your parents ignored you so much?
I only have a theory, but it's a really shoddy one. I think that they were just doing what they saw, like monkey see, monkey do. They saw all their peers having kids, and they just figured, I'm going to have kids too. That's the only theory I have.
Well, and, okay, so they had kids. I mean, If all of my friends get pets and I see them having a great time with pets and I say, well, I'm going to get me a pet, that doesn't mean that I ignore the pet, right? That doesn't follow that I would then ignore it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes. I actually just remembered something. It involves pets too. I remember in my 20s, my dad, he was telling me when my parents got divorced and he was living separately, he told me he liked going to the mall and going to where all the pets were, where all the dogs are. And he said he liked just going to the dog and just like, you know, petting them, having a good time with them for like 15 minutes and then leaving. And I think that that was actually a tell of like how he wanted to basically see me for like 15 minutes and then go away. Like he got his fill. So I think there's something there in regards to their motivations.
Okay. I mean, so that's a description. Like they didn't really enjoy spending much time with children. But the question is, why? Why did they not enjoy spending time with children?
Well, my father, from what little I know from him, my mother's her excuse was that she was always taking care of my little brother. And that's dubious to me because my little brother passed away when he was 18. And once he was passed away, her attention didn't revert back to a normal or expected normal level.
Well, it's not going to happen right away because she's probably kind of burned out. And
it's been a decade.
Okay, but I mean, I'm saying it wouldn't happen right away because she would have the trauma of the difficulties and the death. And I assume he died over a certain period of time. So, I mean, for a parent to lose a child in that way, and of course, all the investment, right? All the investment in taking care of him and then he just ends up dying. I mean, that's pretty brutal, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And again, huge sympathy. It wasn't like, I assume that your brother's genetic issues weren't because your mother did like crack during the pregnancy or anything. Was it just bad luck?
Yes. When he was a fetus, he accidentally suffocated on the umbilical cord. So it was like a kinetic or a physical thing.
Oh, okay. And do you know at what point in the pregnancy?
I'm not sure. It'd probably been late. I'm not entirely sure.
And are your parents religious?
They're cultural Christians.
So they wouldn't have any foundational moral objection to terminating the pregnancy with a fetus that was of questionable viability, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so do you know why? Did they ever tell you why after they realized that your brother, again, I say this with great sympathy, and I don't want to get into the complexities of the abortion debate, but just in terms of if they don't have any particular reason as to why they wouldn't have an abortion or terminate the pregnancy after your brother choked, and I guess it's interesting. Yeah, he lost oxygen and something like that. So I guess why did they continue with the pregnancy? Did they ever talk to you about that?
No. No. I could only guess.
Yeah, I assume if the body was that harmed that the fetus had stopped growing, if he was born with dwarfism and so on, that they would be able to track all of that and realize the damage that had been done due to this, you know, absolute tragedy.
Mm-hmm. I would say, well, my mom was a farm girl, so she was probably very traditional. And then and this is one thing I needed to mention, is my father, he was an orphan. He had an awful upbringing from what little I know about his past. He was beaten as a child by his foster dad, and his mother disowned him for reasons I'm not entirely clear on. He kind of passed that on. There was spanking involved. And then also, I can't quote my dad. I can only quote him screaming at me.
You mean that's mostly like what he... Sorry, you mean he mostly screamed at you?
Pretty much. That's all I remember from him. He would basically just scream at me to get better grades.
Huh.
Like, that's it. And when I would tell him how awful the government schools were, here's the thing is, I remember one time...
I mean, he was in a government program called foster care, right? He should know how bad the government is.
Yes, yes. But here's the thing is, it gets terrible because one of my teachers sabotaged me and to be unbiased, I think she did have a vendetta against me for some reason, besides the point. She claimed that I threw away a worksheet out of protest when I threw away a worksheet because I thought it was bad work. And then I just grabbed a new worksheet, but she framed it as in, I was like throwing it away as in, I don't want to do this. But so she called my parents, and my parents were kind of on my case. And then they said, we're always going to believe the teacher over you. And then I would have been, I believe 12 at that point. And I actually passed out. Like I saw stars when they said that. Sorry, you're not, I shouldn't laugh at that.
Right, right.
If you don't laugh, you cry. So.
Well, that's not necessarily true, but okay. So yes. Your parents basically said they had no loyalty to you and only to the authority figures.
Yes.
I'm sorry about that. That's just terrible. Just terrible. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so, sorry, go ahead.
No. So that's the, I kind of want to get to, I've been meaning to call you for a couple months now, but something actually occurred yesterday, which is the meaning of the call. And, it's further, further down the line. And, but I'd still like to progress the kind of thematic, I don't know what to call it. I guess just progress the conversation, lack of a better word. So there's a certain port I want to get to. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, if you could get there, I'd really appreciate it. I don't need the I don't need the preamble or the preview.
Sorry, I'm not very good at talking with people. But let's see. So it's been so it's mostly that it's just isolation, government schools, parents who are pretty much not there. And the next part is my high school girlfriend.
Sorry, did you just tell me something happened yesterday, right?
Oh yes, yesterday. But I,
sorry, did
I
you forget
wanna...
that, or like I'm not sure you tell me this thing about yesterday is why you're calling, and I don't know what it is.
Well, do you want to jump to that? I was thinking about just progressing to that point, but we can jump
how can
to that,
I know what I should or shouldn't do? You're in possession of the information I don't have.
Yes. Sorry about the confusion. I would like to progress it linearly.
Absolutely. It's your call. I mean, choice. Just you brought up this thing as to why you called.
Yes.
And if you want to do linearly, that's fine. But just give me a sense of what it is you're trying to solve. Like, what is it that you want to get out of the call? Because then I sort of need to know how what you're saying fits into that.
Yes. I would like to, I run away from virtuous people. I run away from them. And the people I tend to keep are non-virtuous people. That's
okay,
the
so
issue.
The issue that you want to solve is you want to be more comfortable with virtuous people?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, got it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So, and then here's our first introduction of me choosing non-virtuous people is my high school girlfriend. She was a very interesting person, deeply, deeply interesting person, though she was a mystic. But as a teenager, not knowing any better, it was pretty, tantalizing. We shared similar interests, which was a big factor to me since, I spent so much time, absorbing books and music and whatnot. And, she was a cutter. She was a cutter. She was a cheater. She cheated on her boyfriend, and I still chose to be with her. And so we started. Sorry, we started living together.
Sorry, how old were you when you started dating?
We started dating 19, but I knew her throughout high school. But we started dating at 19. She was 18. So we lived together. And sure enough, she's cheating on me. I kept going back to her just because I had no one else. There's literally no one on the planet. Sorry. it's planet population one. And to lose somebody on planet population one, it's rough. So I don't know if I kept her around because she was a girlfriend. I think I just kept her around because she was somebody. like a person who I could somewhat communicate with. And it got so bad. I was, 1 year I was stuck in a hurricane with her. So I was trapped. I was trapped in an apartment with her for a week. And with one of these like discoveries of her cheating, and I couldn't leave. I could not leave. Because there's a historic storm outside. And we stayed together for 3 years, and it had a really terrible end. She basically broke up with me, and she was before she broke up with me, she was actually cheating on me when I was holding my brother as he was dying in my arms. When I heard his last breath, she was cheating on me. And I shouldn't, you know, my brother died. He died because he had a, he would get his neck stuck in a certain position. And if somebody wasn't watching for that, he couldn't breathe. And he just so happened to catch the person who was watching him. Just so, in a way that was just, I don't want to say the word perfect. Cause that's a horrible, perfect. He got his head stuck at a point in time that was when nobody was looking for a couple, like 2 minutes. So, and
I mean, that was going to happen sooner or later, I imagine, right?
We knew it was coming. Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. It's
and he actually lived to his life expectancy for his condition, but the doctors at the time told him he wouldn't live past 3 weeks. So he made it. And, you know, one thing I have to give, we were talking about, like, why didn't we give him up and, you know, why didn't my parents abort him? The thing about my little brother is he touched a lot of people because he went to therapy and we did charities with them. So he actually did a lot of good with his life. And that's one thing I do need to give credit where credit is due for my parents. He touched a lot of people, I'm telling you. We went to China to get him stem cell. We raised something like $60,000 to get him to China, get him stem cells, and it was a miracle. He was able to gain function that he previously didn't have. A bit of a tangent, but I wanted to include that just to give honor to my little brother. Yeah, I was the last person to hold my little brother. I actually heard his final breath. And then at that time, you know, girlfriend was hit up some other dudes. And
so you keep talking about her cheating.
Yes.
Like, but I mean, I assume that she was sexually available and you moved in with her. And so she was sexually available because I assume she'd been molested as a child. That's very common for women who cut, right?
She was raped by one of her peers.
Yes. Okay. And do you know anything that happened with her childhood?
Oh, that's one reason I was attracted to her. She had a similar childhood of neglect. She was raised by a single father, and her father would actually leave her alone at home. And one of our cousins actually introduced her to very explicit sexual material, like even more like just the worst kind you can think of, like basically like trauma, like the whole point of it is basically trauma.
Okay, so she was a very damaged young woman, right?
Absolutely.
And
yes,
you kind of used that for sexual access, right?
I would say the primary reason I was with her was just she was a person who I could communicate with to some degree.
You know, the primary reason she was your girlfriend was sexual access. I'm not saying that's the yes. only reason, but if she was a dude, would she have moved in with you?
No.
No. Okay. So it's sexual access, right?
Yes. I see her. Yes.
Right.
I'm on your level.
Okay.
I'm on,
so yeah. You had sex with a highly damaged woman who already had prior sexual trauma. And then you complain that she acts out sexual trauma, but she's only in your life because of the sexual trauma. So I'm a little confused about why you're so upset about the cheating yeah. when she's there because of the sexual trauma.
I guess I just like to torture myself or something. I don't know.
Well, no, that's actually, this is just torturing me with like stuff that doesn't, is not believable. You know, like I let a woman who had, you know, rape trauma and was cutting herself. I let her move in with me in order to have sex with her. And don't you know, don't you know, she turned out to be dysfunctional?
Yes.
I mean, okay. Yeah.
I stupidly thought I could fix her. I stupidly thought I could save her, but that didn't work out. I was basically waiting
for
her to...
Okay, so that's fine. So what did you do to save her?
I tried to just hold things together, maybe provide like an example of somebody who is similar in her situation who can hold it together to some degree. Because I never cheated on her.
So you think that people with a severe amount of childhood trauma can be healed by other people with a similar, with some childhood trauma, having sex with them?
Not my current self, no, but my stupid teenager self did.
Okay, got it. All right, no, and that's fine. But, you know, just for me, you sort of keep talking about her cheating on you.
Yes.
And you have a kind of bitterness in your voice. And that's just a little incomprehensible to me. Again, yes. If you were still 19, that's one thing, but you're in your 30s, right? So, and you've been listening to me for a while. So she didn't need a disturbed guy to have sex with her. She needed like mental health professionals, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So sorry, go ahead.
You're 100% correct. I'm just kind of processing that. And it's something I've also thought about. I think it's just my ego talking there, you know?
Okay. I don't really know what that means, but it's just incorrect.
I'm just trying to protect my ego, basically. And
So you're making her into the bad guy?
Yes, to some degree.
She cheated on me. Can you believe it? While I was holding my brother's dying, blah, 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 right?
Yes.
Okay, well, got it.
I think I do deserve some sympathy there, but I think I am kind of, fishing for sympathy or whatever.
Well, I think you deserve about as much sympathy as you showed to her.
Yes. Yeah.
Because you've just told me, look, I have a bad habit of being with corrupt people. Can you believe this woman cheated on me? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You just told me she was going to cheat on you because you like corrupt people.
Yeah. I find them interesting. I find them.
Right. So if you say, I like going into business with people who cheat others, and then can you believe this guy cheated on me in the business world? I'm like, yeah, of course you can, because you just told me that's what you like.
Yeah. It's absurd. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I'll be pointing out. But anyway, so go ahead. You said it ended badly because she cheated on you. And yeah, go ahead.
No, I deeply appreciate your analysis. Thank you. And you're right. This is stuff I've thought about, but hearing it from somebody else helps a lot.
Okay, good.
So, you know, it ended really terribly. I didn't do anything bad, but she broke up with me, and then she invited her new boyfriend into my apartment house, paying for it. And, I didn't do anything bad, but I did show up inebriated. And when I saw him put his arm around her hip, I actually lost control completely. And then I woke up, air quote, woke up. I regained consciousness. And we had gotten to like a brutal, like hockey match fight. And my face was like, it was like a ground beef, basically. That's pretty much how that ended. And then we actually retained staggered communication on and off with this girl. And it was very confusing. She seemed like she wanted to reconnect and then also not at the same time. Sure, stupid mystic shit.
Yeah, she was crazy. I get it. And that's what you prefer. So, yeah, I get it.
Yes.
You like him short. You're surprised to be shorting. You're dating a short girl. Okay.
Okay, so here's the important part. Here's where I think yesterday comes in is at that point, you know, it's the ground beef phase. I was just... I really had nothing at that point. Like, truly, truly, I had less than nothing at that point because I had a pizza or a beef, ground beef face on top of nothing. And while all this is going on, I actually, about a couple months later, I remember for a week, I just was in a bed. Like, I just didn't get up. I didn't get up from a bed with a blacked out curtain. So I basically saw pitch black for about a week. And then, like, getting food at night. But the only reason I got up on the seventh day is because I started out as a cultural Christian, and then I moved to atheist. And then at this point, I just asked God, I'm like, if you want to do anything with this body, it's like, I'm not. Like, I think I'm tapped out. So I got up, and I just started living for that sake alone. So it's kind of like the Aristotle mindset, which I know you're not a fan of, but.
Sorry, you started living for what sake? Sorry, if I missed
like
that.
Like Aristotle standard of having like the ideal first, rather than working your way up from nothing. Or maybe, I'm not sure. What do you think on that?
Okay, so I'm sorry. Was it a mystical experience that you had? I'm just trying to sort of follow.
It's religious.
Religious experience, okay. And the religious experience told you to start living from virtuous first principles, if I understand it right. If I've got it wrong, please correct me, of course.
I think so.
Well, hang on. It's your experience. I don't know.
Well, it would be God, and if my principles of virtue are based on God, then it would be yes. But I'm not sure if we have the same definition.
Well, I'm a moral philosopher, so living from principles is a good thing. I mean,
let's just
otherwise
say yes
we're just
for the sake
us.
Of argument.
Okay,
so I think it is adjacent. I think
okay,
it's
great. And
similar
so,
enough.
So what principles did God command you to live? And I say this with no cynicism or skepticism, right? What principles did God ask you or want you to live by?
To live for others.
Live for others. Okay. Got it.
And I'm not sure if it was, but honesty, severity, seriousness, truthfulness. And that's how I've lived my life since then. And
okay.
It's
so
better.
Hang on. So truthfulness. I mean, when you complain about the girlfriend you were kind of half exploiting, mm-hmm. cheating on you, is that truthful?
No,
I'm not sure
perfect.
What you mean. Okay, but are you
no,
aware? Were you aware that you were kind of selling a narrative of self-pity there? And please don't tell me useless things like I'm not perfect because yes. I don't have a standard of perfection. Nobody does, so that's not very helpful.
I think that's my like emotional reaction to it. It's not my logical one. And
that's your emotional reaction.
It,
hang on, your emotional reaction to what? To what?
To the 3 years I spent with that girl is emotional, and that's the first thing that bubbles up when I remember it.
The self pity for the cheating.
Yes, rather than the logical. Yes.
Okay. And how old were you when you had the revelation about living more honestly?
22.
So it's been like a decade, right?
Yes.
So how are you still having these emotional reactions rather than telling the truth 10 years into it?
I tell the truth almost all of the time.
That's, like not, I do, that's not answering my question, though.
Sorry,
it's just a statement.
Sorry, repeat.
Well,
sorry.
If for 10 years you have been focusing on telling the truth, and you've also talked about how the stuff that I've been talking about with regards to your girlfriend is stuff that has also occurred for you, right? That you've also thought that you chose her for being crazy, so it's not very healthy to try and elicit self-pity because she cheated on you. And yet you kept telling me that she cheated on you with great bitterness. So I'm just wondering how the whole 10 years of honesty, if you've already had the thoughts that you shouldn't have self-pity for her cheating on you, and then you tell me with great passion in your voice how terrible it was that she cheated on you. I'm just trying to understand, like, are you aware of that deviation from what God is telling you to do?
I'm in the pursuit of truth. Perhaps
okay,
I should
okay, everyone's
word
in
it
the
like
pursuit
that.
Of truth. Okay, you got to stop giving me these cliches.
Yeah, but
I don't do the conversations to have fortune cookies. Everyone's in the pursuit of truth. That doesn't answer the question. More than 10 years, 10 years after your pursuit of truth, 10 years after, you're still trying to sell a self-pity story about being cheated on. Are you aware of that? Because it sounds like you are.
Yes.
Okay, so why is it happening? Why are you trying to tell me this self-pity story when you're fully aware that it's false? Because you have a commitment to truth, right? I'm just asking tough questions. So, you know, forgive me if it's annoying.
No, I understand. And I appreciate it. Well, I think I'm just trying to protect myself or something. Let's see. I still have an ego of some sort that may be overinflated. And I do that to protect myself, I think. Because I really don't have much. I don't know. I think that might be it, something adjacent to that.
I'm sorry, I'm still not sure I understand.
I do that. Why do I do that?
I mean, you've had 10 years to think about it, and you said, well, gee, I probably shouldn't have self-pity over choosing a really deranged woman that she's cheating on me. You've thought of that. And I'm just, you know, being a bit of a nag here, but I just sort of want to understand. Because if I've got 10 years into a particular thing, which is, you know, tell the truth no matter what and all of that, and I've thought, gee, yeah, I really shouldn't complain about choosing the crazy girl and then complaining that she cheats on me, and then you keep complaining that she, and then if I could keep complaining that she cheats on me, then I'm not sure where I am relative to my goal, because you know that it's a false narrative to pretend to be a victim of being cheated on when you chose a girl who'd been sexually assaulted and was a cutter.
Yes.
Right, so she's got severe sexual dysfunction, severe emotional dysregulation, impulsive and self-destructive, right?
Yes.
So it's like me strapping myself into Mario Andretti's car and then complaining that he's speeding in a racetrack, right? I mean, oh God, I can't believe it. It's like, but you're getting into the car of a racetrack driver, right? Of course he's going to go fast. So I'm just trying to understand your relationship to God, because it's a God commandment. You've got to be honest, right? And so were you aware that you were selling me a false? And again, I know this sounds critical. I don't mean it that way. I'm just genuinely curious. Like, were you aware that you were selling me a lie by claiming to be so hard done by her cheating on you when you've already had that thought before and you're committed to telling the truth?
Yes. I think I'm just generally not good at talking, communicating.
No, that's a cope, right? See, again, you're not telling me the truth now because you were very good at communicating that you were a victim of her cheating. You were perfectly good at communicating that.
Yeah, no, I understand completely. It's from this conversation, me kind of dissociating, like looking at me from above, I seem like to be like a peddler of pity, or like I seem to be like hawking self-pity, you know. It's not good.
Well, and I'm, again, I mean, we all do it, right? So this is not a big horrifying thing. I'm just trying to understand whether you are aware of what you're doing, because you have a commitment to truth. And if it was some big revelation, like, oh my God, I'd never thought of that before, but you have thought of it before, right?
I've thought of it, but I've never really talked to anyone about it.
Okay.
So it kind of sounds differently. And why do I do that? Why?
Because you're trying to invite me into a story wherein you're the victim of this woman who repeatedly cheated on you. Well, first of all, if you get cheated on and you stay with the woman, you're no longer a victim. Like, okay, we could say, let's say she was some woman who presented herself as like really sane and healthy and great and wonderful and good and this and that, right? And then, for some mysterious reason, she just ends up cheating on you. Well, then if you stay, you're no longer a victim. Like, I could understand victim the first time, right? But, you know, let's say that you hire an employee with really great credentials and, you know, he's a friend of a friend and he's vouched for and he's got a great work history and so on. And then he just ends up stealing from you, and then you still keep him on as an employee, and then you complain that he keeps stealing from you, right?
Yes.
Then I would say, well, the first time I can give you some sympathy, but if you keep him around after he keeps stealing from you, then don't complain that he keeps stealing from you.
Yes.
Now, but this woman didn't even come with a decent resume. She came with, I'm a cutter and I've been sexually assaulted and I was horribly treated as a child and I'm a mystic, am I this? Like she came with all of the red flags you could possibly conceive of in any single human being.
Yes.
And then so, you're like, I can't believe this woman who has all the red flags of highly chaotic, self-destructive, and dysfunctional behavior is acting in a highly chaotic, self-destructive, and dysfunctional manner. I'm a victim.
Yes.
Nope.
You caught something. I'm going to be mulling over for quite a while. And
well, it also tells me, and this is part of what you were saying about, you know, you are drawn towards amoral or immoral people, because amoral or immoral people, they either wouldn't tell you this or they tell it to you in a way that was trying to humiliate you.
Mm-hmm.
They would view, like, if someone lies to you or lies to me, and I'm not saying this is some massive conscious lie, but if someone lies to me or to you, that puts us in a position of power, because we can call them out or we can call them big stinky old liars and we can grind them morally or whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so if you're around people who are corrupt, then what they'll do is they will use you lying to them as something that gives them power over you, and they'll kind of grind you for it, if that makes sense.
Yes, they'll run roughshod over you.
Right. So I'm not, hopefully, you know, we all have falsehoods, we all have things that we lie to ourselves and others about, so I'm not trying to grind your gears and make you, oh, some terrible guy or something like that. But nonetheless, if you tell me, like right after you've misled me, then you say, well, God told me to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I have questions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, do you want to progress further? Is there more insight you have on this that you want to share?
No, I just wanted to sort of...
Yes, yeah. I understand you completely, and it's irrational for me to expect anything other than what I got.
Okay, so you dedicate yourself to God and service to others and honesty and truth in your early 20s, and what happens then?
So I start walking different, and I don't live for myself, which living for myself wasn't working out because I'm on planet population one, and being kind of at the whims of just like another person just to communicate with wasn't working out. So now I'm kind of more focused on other people, and that's how I currently am today. That's why I love your show. It's just it is vital. It is vital to my life. And I want to thank you and everyone for doing what you do, for bearing yourselves open to the world.
I appreciate that. And sorry, I appreciate that. Sorry, I just want to understand. I'm not following something. I'm sure it can be sorted out. But if you are kindness and light and helping others and so on, then why do you avoid good people and are drawn to bad people?
Well, that's what I'm calling about today is the second rule, who I met shortly after, or not shortly, a couple months after the first high school girlfriend is, I met her, she was working at a coffee shop, and, you know, she asked me out. And I just thought she was just a whatever, like, she was decently pretty. So I just go hang out with her, and, you know, she starts talking, and the city I was living in that I moved to when I was 10 years old was a city of dullards for the most part. The average IQ of the city was well below average for the country. And so everyone's just kind of like a TV football, no offense to football watchers, but just kind of go to work, TV, sleep kind of deal. And this girl, she starts talking to me about amino acids and stuff, and just actual concepts that I'm interested in. It's just like actual substantive things. And, you know, for the first time in my life, just like how I intuited death and suicide, I think in that moment, when we're at that diner, she's talking about the things she's interested in. I think I did intuit what love is in that moment. I remember my hearing turned off. I could still hear what she was saying, but all the other sounds were just muted. And I didn't say anything. I was just zombified. That I have met somebody who has like thoughts. And that was really pronounced. That was a very extreme, explosive moment in my life. Was just her talking. I didn't even need to be her boyfriend, she needed my girlfriend. I was just happy that somebody like her existed. And so we keep talking. And how did things kind of fall apart at first? I cannot remember why. What happened? Oh, her scheduling was terrible. She would schedule little dates. She would schedule like 3 dates in a week, and then she would cancel on all of them. And it was just very inconsistent, and it just didn't work out for that reason. She was a very strange person. She was an enigma. And she moved away. I let her move away. I was like, I'm still not fully developed. I gotta learn how
Sorry,
the world
hang on.
Works.
Sorry, what do you mean you let her move away? What do you mean?
Oh, she moved to a different city.
No, I understand what moved away means. It's the let her moved away that I'm trying to understand.
The letter?
Yeah, you said you let her move away.
Oh, let her move away. Yeah, because I don't think I was, I fully
No, she wasn't even showing up for dates. How are you going to stop her? Or what leverage would you have to have her not move away?
Yeah, you're right. I think it was one-sided.
Yeah, let her move away. I mean, so when I'm talking, if you could not, I'd appreciate it. So when you say you let her move away, I'm just trying to understand the formulation. Do you mean like you didn't make a big play for her or something else?
Yeah, I did not make a big play for her.
Okay, got it. I just want to make sure I understood. Okay, so she moved away, and how long did you kind of half date?
About a year.
A year? Okay, and did you sleep together?
No. There's actually no like physical contact. It was very strange.
So then that's
one
love,
of those
right?
kind of deals. Sorry?
That's not love then.
I'm not sure if it was romantic, but I was. Well, you define love as a response to virtue.
If we're virtuous.
And the virtue I saw in her was the openness and the thoughtfulness.
Thoughtfulness? And, she wouldn't even let you, she kept canceling on you.
Yeah, that's right.
How's that thoughtful? I swear to God, I've spent 20 years with people making up this immense amount of nonsense in my ear. I just tell you, it's a funny experience. I'm not nagging at you or anything. It's just like, yeah, this woman kept canceling and ghosting and wouldn't respond, and I could never define the relationship, but she was super thoughtful. And what the hell are you talking
about?
Yeah,
you're right. I misspoke.
No, that's not a misspeaking. That's again a kind of falsehood. I'm going to be strict with you about this because you said that you've got this Aristotelian God-given impulse to be honest, right? So did you notice that calling her thoughtful was a complete contradiction on everything you'd practically told me about her?
Thoughtful thoughtful in that she had deep interests in things. That's kind of what I meant.
Oh, not maybe not thoughtful in terms of being considerate of others.
Yes, she was.
Oh,
not
so
thoughtful
she was. So she
regard.
Was. She had interests.
She was going to college at the time, and
now you know
she
you're gaslighting me now,
Stemfield.
Right?
Sorry,
you know you're gaslighting me now, right? Because we were talking about virtues, right? And then you said she's thoughtful. Now, if we're talking about virtues and you say thoughtful, do you think I mean that she has intellectual interests or she's considerate of others? Because we're talking in the context of virtue.
You think considerate of others, definitely.
Of course, right.
What is virtue?
Right. So then you said, no, I didn't mean it in that way. It's like, well, then this is gaslighting. Because if we're talking about virtues and you say, well, one of her virtues is that she's thoughtful, then I'm going to think that means that she's considerate of others, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then if yes. you say, well, I didn't mean it that way, I meant it in terms of she has thoughts, which is mm-hmm. a slightly less standard usage, which is fine. But thoughtful generally means considerate of others. And if we're talking about people's virtues, thoughtful means considerate of others. And then if you change the definition, that's gaslighting.
Mm-hmm. I suppose I need to slow down and
I'm questioning your commitment to honesty.
Yes. Well, I'm saying that you're right. Virtue, thoughtfulness as a virtue would be consideration of others.
Right. And so you had just told me that she was inconsiderate in that she would cancel on you 3 times a week, which is very inconsiderate. Mm-hmm. And then you say she's considerate and you don't seem to notice the discrepancy.
Mm-hmm.
So are you living in narrative or facts? Like, what troubles me is that you don't seem to notice these things. And then when I point something out, like you just told me she ghosted you 3 times a week and now you're calling her thoughtful.
Yeah.
You don't seem to notice the discrepancy. And then you say, oh no, I was using a definition of thoughtful that has no place in this conversation.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of reliving it almost. So I'm kind of
Reliving what?
I think I'm just kind of like reliving these events. I'm kind of looking at it from the perspective of being there and being influenced by these emotions.
What?
And not the
No, you just gaslit me. What are you, I'm reliving, blah, 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 right?
Yes.
You were caught in a contradiction, and it's fine. Look, it happens to all of us, so this is not like some big, terrible thing, right? Because you said she's very thoughtful after telling me she kept ghosting you. And also, you wanted a romantic relationship, right?
Yes.
Okay. She did not want a romantic relationship. Is that right?
It's hard to say.
Well, you didn't. You wanted it and it didn't happen. Therefore, she didn't want it.
Well, here's the thing is I got back into contact with her recently, a year ago, and she confirmed that she did have feelings for me. And then we did actually straight up date and have plans for marriage, actually.
Okay, so let's just go back to when you're in your early 20s and you meet this girl. And did you try to kiss her?
No.
You tried to hold her hand, and what happened?
Kind of unresponsive, I would say.
Okay, so you never tried to kiss her, although you wanted to, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So is it kind and considerate to keep a guy in the friend zone for a year?
No.
Okay. Who paid for the dates, if we can call it the outings?
It was both of us.
Okay, so that was 50-50. That was mutual, right?
Yep.
Okay. Did she ever tell you that she didn't want to kiss you or did not want a romantic relationship at the time?
No.
Okay, so she just kind of kept you around in the friend zone and you were there for romance. She kept you there in the friend zone for a year without being honest and direct about what she wanted or thought.
Yes.
Is that considerate?
No.
Is that kind?
No.
Is that thoughtful?
No.
Okay. So she wasn't any of those things. So when I said to you, is it love? Because she talked about amino acids or whatever the hell was going on. Is it love? You said, well, love is a response to virtue. And she had these virtues. And as it turns out, she did not have those virtues.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of make stuff up. Let me tell you about her virtues, which are contradicted by everything she did.
Mm-hmm. You're 100% correct. And the information that is going to, that I'll soon provide will back you up on that.
All right.
You're 100% correct. So, what I'm talking about is like when we started actually dating a year ago. And that's when, okay, so I sent her a message, and then a couple months later on like Facebook, which nobody my age uses Facebook. So she texts me back a couple months later when she sees it. She just so happened to go on there, see the message, and we start texting, and she seems like she's her old self. I come to find that old self was never real, and the truth was worse than I could ever imagine. But let me just continue the story. So we're texting. I actually ask her out, or I ask her just directly to be my girlfriend. She agrees. And then we plan to meet up in a city.
Sorry. I'm not sure how this stuff works with people considerably younger than me. So she gets back in touch. You get back in touch with her after 10 years and you start texting. And then you say to her, will you be my girlfriend?
After like a month of intense talking. Yeah.
Okay. And are you guys far apart?
At that time, yes.
Okay. Got it. Okay. So she says, yes, I'll be your girlfriend. I just wanted to make sure I understood, but sorry, go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. So we make a plan to meet up in a different city that we're both not living in at the moment. And so I get there and supposedly she has some obligation that she can't be there for 2 weeks. So yeah, I already know what you're thinking. Or I don't know what you're thinking. I'm not a mind reader, but I hear.
So you make a plan to meet and you go there and she says, I can't be there for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she does. What's so strange is she flies me over to her city. She says, we'll meet there. And then we don't meet. And then we basically meet at the airport to go back to the city we originally planned to meet at. So it was very strange. I basically flew to her city just to walk around 2 days. And then fly back with her. It's just like, I don't even see.
Sorry, I thought she was not available for 2 weeks. How was it only 2 days?
No, after the 2 weeks. So I stayed in the city we planned to meet in. And then 2 weeks later, I fly over there and then meet her at the airport and come back.
And then you both go back to the city you just came from?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was there for like no reason, but that's kind of a minor thing. But, and that's where it got even. But this is where the most bizarre period of my life begins. Is we get to the place we're staying, and she is like, let's go take a shower. I'm like, what? I gotta do it. It's just like, go take a shower. Like, we just met up. And so, you know, I'm like, all right. And I remember it being very uncomfortable. Just like getting naked in front of this girl I've never seen naked before. And one thing I needed to note at the beginning is she's kind of like a kind of Marxist adjacent. So she's like this new AD, tomboy, you know, type. So she's kind of like likes to take initiative. So you take
a shower.
Sorry,
this was relatively recent, right?
Yeah, this was a year ago.
Okay, so you got together with an unstable Marxist.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
So we shower together. It's extremely awkward. I'm like very uncomfortable, but nothing quite happens. And, you know, we're spending time together and it seems like she's the person she portrayed herself as. For some...
Sorry, I don't know what that means. She's the person she portrayed herself as? What does that mean?
The person I was talking to on the phone and the person that I knew.
Okay, but what is that? I don't know what that is.
So when I thought she was like a somewhat in terms of her... I saw some sliver of rationality in her, but that sliver turned... into some sort of demonic creature. That's the most accurate way I can put it. The words she told me were so bad to me.
Okay, just cut to the chase. What did she say? I mean, all this teasing is like, I'm not in the shower.
She was telling
with you.
Me
just,
how
just take me there.
Useless I was, how dumb I was, how just like the worst things worse than my dad screaming at me. Just the worst, absolute worst things. And that thing I felt in the diner, whether it was love, whatever it was, whatever that thing was, when my hearing shut off.
Sorry, you mean the Starbucks?
It wasn't. It was a diner.
A diner. Sorry. Yeah. So she was a waitress at a diner.
She was a barista at a coffee shop, like a local coffee shop.
Got it.
And then we the moment where I thought I was in love with her was a diner. But the moment in the diner, over the course of days of this, like, just hellish torture, I just watched it evaporate. Just whatever that thing was.
Marxism is sadism. So, I mean, the fact that she was a sadist and a Marxist is not shocking, is it?
Yeah. Dehumanizing is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, Marxists dehumanize. They put everyone in class categories and then work to liquidate them.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Okay.
All right. So you spent a couple of days being verbally torn down by this woman, right?
Yes.
And then what?
And also, it gets worse. We were at the beach, and I did something not good, but I did it kind of, I'm just going to say it, but we're at the beach, and I semi-jokingly, you know, we were sleeping in the same bed together, showering together, so I figured the boundaries were there, but I kind of semi-jokingly.
Sorry, were you sleeping together or just sleeping together? Like, were you sleeping together or just sharing
just like
bed?
Sleeping, like, in the same bed.
So you were showering together and sleeping together, but no sexual activity?
Not at this point, but shortly after this event, I'm going to tell you.
Okay,
sleeping together. And I kind of semi-jokingly sniffed her panties. In retrospect, that was not a good play. But when I did that and she saw that, she actually hit me, like, relatively hard on the top of my head. And I saw stars. And that was just unbelievable. I've never been hit with kind of, I've never been hit with whatever that was. Like, I've been punched and stuff by men, but to be hit by a woman, it was different. And it seemed like it had some sort of malice behind it. She did it twice. It was one hit. And it seemed like it wasn't enough for her, so she hit me again harder. So it was like a double tap. But I saw stars afterwards and just, like, looked at her and just, like, shocked. As, like, a 30-year-old man who's, like, kind of been through a bit. And just, like, in shock, like, what is this? Like a newborn baby just, like, discovered something new. And yeah, it's just, let's see. And then I'm in a forever. There's so much news. Kind of like with the hurricane, I'm actually kind of stuck. Not really stuck with her, but I'm in a predicament with her. But I should have just left at that point, but I didn't. We start having sex a couple days after that. And the verbal torture didn't stop.
Well, I mean, this is a humiliation fetish, right? I mean, did your father scream at your mother?
Yes.
And
yes.
She had sex with him, right? So your mother probably had a humiliation fetish, and maybe you did too. It sounds like it.
That's fascinating.
But, I mean, you're turned on by women who treat you badly, and you stay with them, and you have sex with them, and this woman gaslit you, and then left you, abandoned you in a city, and then she would have she showered with you but wouldn't have any sex, and you sleep in the same bed and no sex, and she's verbally abusing you, and you're like, there for it, man. And then she beats you, and then you have sex with her. So maybe this is a thing for you. I mean, I say this without judgment. I'm just looking at the cause and effect, but if your father was a screamer and your mom stayed with him, then maybe your mom had a humiliation fetish for whatever tragic reasons we can think of, and maybe you do too.
It's likely. So I'll
and she's testing for that, right? She's testing. Well, what happens if I just don't show up at the city? Oh, he's still hanging around. Okay, what happens if I say, let's shower, and I don't touch him? Okay, well, let's say if I sleep together. Okay, so because it's humiliating for a man, right, to be in the shower, to be in a shower with a woman who says she's already agreed to be his girlfriend and he can't touch her. I mean, did you try to make a move in the shower the first time?
No, I didn't. No. Nope.
Okay. So she's testing you for self-confidence and security and self-respect, yes. Right? She's testing you for self-respect. And you keep coming back like a beaten dog to get beaten again.
Yep.
Okay. So sexuality has been co-joined in your mind and loins, I assume, with humiliation.
To some degree.
Well, everything's to some degree. That's a useless statement, right?
Sorry.
Do I have courage? To some degree, especially if you know Aristotle, to some degree is the essence of morality.
Yeah.
Do you have courage? To some degree, right? I mean, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Are you healthy? To some degree. It's like, well, nobody's perfectly healthy, and people who are imperfectly healthy 100% are dead. So to some degree is not adding. It's just a fog.
It is a component. Right? It is a component that is there for sure.
Okay. So you have sex with this woman after she hits you twice hard, and then what?
So we actually go back to her city, and she kind of doesn't want to let me go. She keeps paying for hotels, even though her budget doesn't quite fit that. And she was buying hotels so we could continue having sex. And then her brother dies. Jeez. Her brother died during this time. And I actually got to see her break down, which I never even thought was possible.
He died of what? I'm sorry?
Fentanyl.
Oh, overdose. Yeah, okay. Got it.
Yes. And I actually got to see it break down. I didn't know that was possible. I didn't know what to do. I had no idea what to do. I didn't even know she was capable of doing that. So I comfort her as much as I can. And I tell her everything I was told when my little brother died. I told her, you know, it doesn't get any better, but it gets easier, and like that kind of thing. And I was telling her, you have to live your life the best you can for the sake of your brother, make him proud of you. And so I was trying to encourage her and stuff. So her brother dies. She gets over it rather quick, which is strange. Like a day, the next day, actually within hours. It seems like she's relatively stable. She's very strange thinking back on that.
If we can imagine your dead, crippled brother looking down upon you in heaven, is he proud of you?
No.
So the comfort that you were giving her is not something that you're doing, right? You're not living your life so that your brother can be proud of you.
No, I'm not. Nope.
So just a bunch of noise, right? Just more fortune cookies.
What else should I say?
Well, you do what God told you to do. Tell the truth, which you told me about. That's your mission. Anyway, so how does this thing, I assume it's over. She gets better within a couple of hours, and then what?
So yes, it gets over a couple hours. And then I go back to the city we planned on living in. She's staying in the city she's working in, and we retain communication.
Sorry, last I heard you were going to be boyfriend, girlfriend. When did you decide you were going to live together?
When I was in the city we planned to move in together with, and she was still in the city she was working in.
No, but when was that relative to her hitting you and her brother dying?
It was before.
Okay. All right. Got it. So you had decided you were going to live together, and then what?
We retained communication for about a month, and it got even worse and worse and worse. And I heard she told me the most. Okay, let me try to be unbiased, but we're talking about. Should I even say this? I heard the worst thing I've ever heard in my life, and we're talking about abortion. And I'm very extremely anti-abortion. And she goes, well, what about the rapist? And I'm like, well, that doesn't mean you get to kill the baby. The baby didn't do anything.
Sorry, the rapist. Says, oh, like you mean a theoretical rapist?
Yeah.
Not the we're talking about guy like, who in the raped case your of ex. Rape. Okay, got it.
Yeah. And I go, well, the baby didn't do anything. Why are we killing the baby? Why aren't we killing the rapist? Why are we killing the baby? And she says, this is the worst I ever heard in my life. She says, who cares about a rapist baby? Like the baby is already a rapist, basically. Like the sin of the rape has like transferred to the baby. And it's like, I cannot shake that. That stopped.
She missed the apostrophe S. It's not who cares about the rapists. baby, who cares about the rapist baby?
Yes.
So who cares about the baby who is already a rapist?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yes.
You checked
that with her? I confirmed it with her. I checked it with her.
She said the baby is born with original sin. Well, that sort of makes sense for a Marxist, because in a Marxist, your moral worth is dependent upon the class you're born into.
Yes.
So you're like the child of a kulak, you're the child of a bourgeoisie, then you're still going to get killed, right?
Yes.
So that's not shocking. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's just the worst thing. And then the Charlie Kirk thing happened, and she was like dismissive of it. She's like, oh, well, you need all... She's like, I don't... that's where I decided that. It's not like...
Sorry, you need to stay close to your microphone, man.
Sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
So it was just like all these horrid conversations, horrid, horrid. And I blocked her number. And it doesn't end there, because yesterday, this is where I ultimately wanted to come to, because I was after this call, I was a zombie, like I am somewhat right now. I'm better than I was yesterday, but I was a zombie.
Oh, you went after the call you had with her yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I was in a bathtub, and I turned the water into brine, and I did that because she called me from a private number to get past the fact that I blocked her. And I discovered a lot of things. I discovered that she has not changed. Like, I tried to convince her of... And here's the thing. I didn't start listening to your philosophy until 6 months ago. So this would have been in between blocking her number and her calling me yesterday. So I actually got to listen to her philosophy, got to apply a lot in this conversation. And I took her to point it. So I learned that that she was basically, I got her to slip up, and she basically, I got her to say that she was basically using me to pay for half of the vacation, and then basically as an escort. She was just insulting me, my characteristics and stuff.
But you blocked her. Why didn't you just hang up when she called?
But
why not?
I wanted to see if she changed, but she didn't.
Oh, come on. No, you didn't.
She didn't change.
No, but... She was the same. She was even worse 10 years after you had the year with her when you were in your early 20s.
Yeah.
So how is she supposed to change? Her brother dying didn't change her. Hitting you didn't change her. You breaking up with her didn't change her. How is she going to change?
I was personally curious if... Because I was talking to her about a lot about morality, a lot about like how we should be treating each other. Because she treats people extremely poorly, generally. Not just me, but other people around her. And I was curious, for my own purposes, have you taken any of that to heart? And the answer was no. And I asked her to define love.
Okay, you know, so hang on. Okay, so tell me what she said, and then I'll tell you.
She said unconditional affection or something like along those lines. And I said no, but... The definition of love is a response to virtue. What are your virtues? And she said, I don't know. And then she said, what are my virtues? And I told her, you don't have it. And that is what caused me to zombify. And just, that's what, I think what killed me on that call yesterday is just, I learned for a fact, for an absolute undeniable fact that it was never anything. So.
Sorry, it was never anything? Did I catch that right?
Yes. The love I thought I had for her.
Oh, the love I thought I had for her.
Was truly, like, undeniably never there.
Okay. So the girl who verbally abused you, beat you, and exploited you financially turned out to not be virtuous.
Yes, and I know for her, it is impossible to even... There's no reasonable doubt. That's not true. There's no more reasonable doubt.
So you wanted her to change while being her punching bag, letting her exercise her sadistic impulses on you. You had sex with her and you paid for a bunch of stuff. So you rewarded her for being bad and then you hoped that she'd become good.
Yes.
Okay.
She apologized for the hitting and she maintained a false, like a shoddy sense of rationalism the whole time, which I never passed the smell test, but.
Okay, so we have about another 20 minutes left.
And how can I best help you?
How can I be motivated to, I have an interest in these like damaged people. I have like a fascination because they're similar to me and they're awful. They're fucking bad. I can't help them either. That's the other thing too, is I thoroughly.
Oh no, no! You reward them. Hang on, you reward them.
Yeah, I need to stay away from them. But my mind is fascinated by them. That's the problem. It's,
well, what's fascinating?
Just the dysfunction. The. I can't talk much about this, but part of my work is it is extremely problem. I problem solve for 12 hours a day every day. And the way you solve a problem, one of the really good way to solve a problem is to figure out what doesn't work and identify why it's not working. My brain just is addicted to that. It just loves just mulling over dysfunction.
Okay, now I get it. So what's your relationship like with your parents at the moment?
I haven't talked to my dad in 4 years, and my relationship with my mother is hollow, and the last time I saw her, her boyfriend was screaming at me because he didn't like the way I cleaned up the dog pen. He's an idiot. He's like a, I don't mean to be mean, but he has a lower than average IQ. He's like, I'm not going to say that, but so the last moment I saw my mother was in horror, but not so much from her, but she didn't really do much to stop him. And she's still with him. So I'm still in this city that I moved to, and I don't really know anyone. I don't quite have any close friends. I do go and talk to this one of my neighbors who has Alzheimer's just to keep him company. That's about it. And that's horrifying. To be with him, but I do it anyways. So. The answer is I need to figure out how to break this fascination with corrupt people. Like
so what is fascinating? Well, sorry, why are you still in a relationship with your mother if she's with a guy who abuses her and you?
I don't really talk to her. I don't really. I've kind of
okay. When did you go and visit her?
Oh, over a year ago.
Okay. And how often are you in contact with her?
Very rare, like once every couple months, like every like 4 months, basically.
Have you ever had a conversation with your parents about their deficiencies when you were young?
I have with my father, and he screamed at me.
Okay. And your mother?
No.
Why do you think the difference is?
I'm still kind of figuring her out. She plays the nice girl, but I know she's not invested in other people. She's just being nice just to get things, basically, or like retain a network. She's not actually enthusiastic about being around other people. She's doing it just to be a part of the tribe and not be a pariah.
Yeah, she uses people.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like you were used by your girlfriends. Is your mother...
Like how I was using you in this conversation to some degree.
Certainly manipulation to make yourself feel better or look better,
yes.
Which I sympathize with. Like, I'm not condemning you for that. We all have that habit. Now...
I'm going to work on that. I'm going to work on your, that and make a serious effort.
Thank you. Is your mother a typical female? How do you view your mother on the bell curve of femininity?
Very feminine. Somewhat, she's like traditional, but like a dysfunctional traditional. So it's like she grew up on a farm. I just don't think she's a moral person. She's
no, I get all of that. I appreciate that. I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to understand if your mother is somewhat typical in your mind in terms of femininity.
Yes.
Okay. Why? Because she's not.
Somewhat submissive to her partners, and then is very conscious about networking, about like the tribe. She likes shopping. She has to drive a new car. She has to have a nice house.
Okay, so she's materialistic, and she is masochistic in that she is happy to have sex with guys who scream at her and scream at her children.
Yes.
Okay. Do you think that's typical for female?
Logically, no, but I think my mind is warped. In my head.
Okay, so
yes.
Hang on. So if your mother is typical for females, then if you don't find a woman like your mother, you must be gay. Like, you know, if women are manipulative and men are direct, let's just take some cliches, right?
Mm-hmm.
If women are manipulative and men are direct, then if you like a direct woman, you must be kind of gay. And I don't mean this in a pejorative way, like gay is bad. It just, that would be the conclusion. If you find a woman who's manipulative and you're straight, and that's who women are, then you've got to embrace the manipulative stuff because that's what women are, and you're straight.
Yeah.
And it is, of course, a great way to avoid giving your mother responsibility. So I'll just give you a brief thing on this. And my mother was crazy. My wife is eminently sane, so I know a little bit about redefining what it means to be a female, so I hope you'll bear with me here. So what we do is we say, and how we evolved, like if this was who your mother was in a small tribe of 150 people or 100 people, a small village or whatever, then this is what all the women would be like, pretty much. So if you didn't view your mother as the general female, and the mothers around are all raising daughters like her, and if you tried to say, well, if all the women are around are manipulative, but I don't want a manipulative woman, then those genes die out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you say, my mother is the typical female. She is the essence of female. She's the essence of femininity.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you go out into the world and you meet a lot of women, but because you've defined female as manipulative or false or aggressive or, you know, whatever dysfunctions your mother has, then you're programmed to be attracted to that. And it also allows you to not hold your mother responsible, because it would be like holding a woman responsible because she's developing breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not, that's just genetics, right? That's just puberty and breast development. Or holding a woman saying, there's something wrong with you because you can't grow a beard, right? That's just genetics, right? So if we say, my mother is the typical female, that's just female nature, then we get to forgive our mother, because you can't blame your mother for being a female. Like that would be irrational, right? And so what you do is you say, my mother is what femininity is. And then you roam around the world and then you meet a woman who's like your mother, and that clicks into place with your genetic programming, your reproductive programming, which says, you find a woman like my mother, just like dad did, because your father is the most successful male for reproduction in your immediate environment because you exist, right? So clearly he succeeded in impregnating. And so if dad likes a woman like mom and dad's sexually successful, my programming is going to be to seek out a woman like my mother. And that's how my genes reproduce. And throughout most of our evolution, that was pretty much the whole deal. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I understand completely.
Okay. You're drawn to women like your mother. It's not Freudian. It's just evolution and so on. So you're drawn to women like your mother. And your great temptation is to say, my mother is not dysfunctional. She's just female. And then you have to ignore all of the healthy, assertive, mature women who don't act like your mother, because somehow they're just not female. They're not in the definition of female. and so on. So an honest, direct, honorable woman would strike you as unfeminine because female is like your mother. Female is your mother. And so a woman who's not like your mother is not feminine.
Okay, I understand.
And so you are drawn to women like your mother, which again, evolutionarily makes perfect sense, but just doesn't lead to happiness. Your mother made specific choices. Your mother made specific choices. She made specific choices to marry abusive men. Now, I'm sure her father was abusive, so that's her template, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we move beyond templates here, right? This is a philosophy show, not a copy-paste evolutionary biology show. So your mother made specific choices to be with abusive men and to hand over the care of you to an abusive man, and now she's with an abusive guy. I think you may have intimated he was of another race or something like that. Doesn't really matter. But your mother has a template that men are screamers, that men are abusive, that men are highly aggressive, and that's masculinity for her. And so she is marrying or having sex with a caricature of masculinity. And you are drawn to, or dysfunctional females have power over you because you are drawn to a caricature of femininity. Like normal like feminine qualities to the max. You know, there's a lot of women who, leave some disciplinary elements with their children to the father. Like that happens from time to time, but not to the point of abuse or something like that, or hitting or yelling or whatever it is, right? But sometimes I can be a little bit firmer as a parent than my wife can be. And there's nothing wrong with that. This seems to me kind of healthy and all of that. She does things that I'm not good at. So the fact that women will sometimes turn over some more sternness to the male is fine. What's not fine is if they get turned on or they're happy with or fine with the father screaming torrents of abuse at the children. Right? As you said, you could barely remember your father when he wasn't screaming, right? That's almost like it doesn't exist, right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Good, good. So, yeah, so that's why. That's why you keep into these crazy relationships.
Yeah.
It's because you haven't condemned your mother morally. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're 100% correct, on point, because I've been avoiding this. Kind of what you're talking about, the evolutionary like Freudian, you're attracted to your mother type thing. I've actually been actively avoiding that because part of me knew that was the truth of things. And yeah. So
your mother's an outlier. Your mother is an outlier. And even let's say that she's a typical female. I don't think she is, but let's say that she is a typical female. Well, that doesn't mean that that's the female you have to choose. Right. Yeah. So if I'm running a woman's basketball team, right? Well, the average height of a woman is like 5'3", right? Whatever it is, 5'4", 5'3", 5'4", something like that, right? So if the average height of a woman is 5'3", do I say, regarding my basketball team, well, I can't choose any woman who's not 5'3" or below? I'd say, no, I'm looking for an outlier, an extra tall 6'2" woman, right?
Yep.
Because I'm running a basketball team. So if you want a really great marriage, even if we were to say your mother is the average, again, I'm not saying she is, but even if we were to say that, that doesn't mean that's what you have to choose any more than a basketball team owner has to choose a short woman or a woman of average height to be on the basketball team. You got to raise your standards. But raising your standards means criticizing your mother.
Mm-hmm.
And every time we raise our standards, we criticize the people who fail to meet our standards, right? So if you're just playing some local game of softball or whatever, people don't have to be very good. I played as a teenager with people who were sometimes, some of them were very good, some of them weren't. It doesn't really matter. But once you start playing for money and then you start playing like semi-professionally and then you get to the game, the show, and you get all the way to the major leagues, you've got to keep raising your standards. And as you keep raising standards, fewer and fewer people make the cut, right?
Yes.
I mean, 1 out of 10,000 hockey players ends up in the NHL, and there's a ruthless process of weeding out the people. So if you want to have a great marriage, it means that you want to play at the top level of the relationship game. And that means that even if we say your mother's the average, okay, fine. Let's say your mother's the average, but you want something extraordinary. You want something great. You want true moral and virtuous love, which means the average has to be invisible to you. Doesn't matter. Doesn't count. In the same way, if you're running a basketball team and someone says, well, I'm good at baseball and I'm 5'3", you don't even call them in for an interview. Like, they're not even on the, it's like, what the hell's this person? Just throw it in the garbage, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I actually dated a virtuous woman once and I broke up with her.
Okay. How long did that last?
Like 2 months.
Uh-huh.
I just found her to be just boring.
Well,
just,
I doubt she was a virtuous woman.
Well,
I mean, wouldn't a virtuous woman call you on your bullshit?
Yeah.
She was probably just inert or empty.
Yeah. Okay. That frames it differently for me. Never thought of it. I always just assumed...
Good women are pretty active. They're pretty positive. They don't take a lot of bullshit. They'll call you out on stuff. And they'll, of course, expect to be called out on their stuff as well and all that, right?
Yep.
So, no, she probably just wasn't actively insane, but probably just more inert.
Yeah. So we just watched TV all the time. That's all we did.
Yeah. So that's not virtue. That's just catatonic.
Yeah. Okay. So the problem is that I'm kind of, I have the idea of like a common female in my head that I desire to be in a relationship with. And I need to filter out candidates based on what is important, which what is important is virtue.
Well, no, you've just got to make virtue important to yourself.
Mm-hmm. You're right, that.
I mean, this last woman, the Marxist, she's this fucking nuts. It's an insane story.
Yep.
She didn't even show up at the place you flew to meet. And then she flies, you stay there, and then she flies back to the city you came from, and then you have a shower with her, and you can't touch her, and you sleep with her, and you can't touch her, and you sniff her panties, and she beats you around the head, verbally abuses you, and then you have sex, and then her brother dies, and she doesn't even really care about it. And it's like, this is a fucking insane story, bro.
Yeah.
How about you start caring about virtue?
Yeah.
I mean, you seem to be shocked that the Marxist had no virtues. She's a Marxist.
Yeah. And the
it's like
trajectory
saying,
has been...
Sorry, go ahead.
The trajectory has been positive since I've been listening to you. I'll say that. Because I've started listening to your philosophy past 6 months. Been binge watching it. It's been improving. So I'd say we're on a positive trajectory.
Good.
At the moment.
Good. Yeah. Well, I mean, just be skeptical, right? You can't fix people. That's just the urge to fix people almost always comes out of repetition, compulsion, masochism. I mean, you've known your mom for over 30 years. Have you fixed her?
No.
Nope. You've known your dad up until 4 years ago for over a quarter century. Did you ever fix him?
Nope.
Nope. Can't fix people. And you have more leverage over them than some random chick from the internet. So you can't fix them. Can't fix them.
Yep.
Even if they beg you for help, even if they say, I've done terrible things, I'm a bad person, blah, 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 even then, you can't fix them.
Can they fix themselves?
Well, first of all, they have to admit there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's somebody who's 250 pounds and says, I'm husky, this is healthy for me, and I don't want to be skinny fat, I'm perfectly happy with the weight I am. In fact, I think I'm underweight. Will that person ever lose weight while they have that mindset?
No.
No, of course not. They will never lose weight. As long as they have that mindset, they will never lose weight. Ever. Never, ever, ever, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So your parents, have they admitted fault? Have they admitted they did anything wrong?
They've done the opposite.
Yeah, so they won't change.
When I brought the story about the when I told my dad the last conversation I had with him, I said, "Well, you're the one who told me that you're always going to believe the teacher."
Yeah,
and he said, "I didn't say that."
No, but it's outgroup preference, right? So this is where maybe you learned your gaslighting habits from. But yeah, that's just outgroup preference, right?
Yeah.
So that's you know, the preference. Heat map. You've seen the heat map where, you know, people on the left, I don't know if they were on the left, but people on the left generally have this out-group preference. They prefer strangers to family. They prefer foreigners to their own citizens. And right, it's just an out-group preference. It's people who ally with an invading army hoping to get good stuff from the invaders, right? So,
yeah.
So, yeah, you just have to recognize, because if you say, I can fix people when you can't fix them, that's just masochism. Because you're just saying to yourself, you're setting yourself up for complete failure and being inadequate. So you have to say, I could never, like, I haven't talked to my mom in like 25 years or whatever, right? I can't fix her. And if I kept trying to fix her and failing, I'd just feel worse and worse about myself. You know, if you've got a lock and you got 500 keys and you really want to get through the lock, if you keep thinking, well, I just got to keep trying keys, then you're going to be stuck there forever. If you finally say, none of these keys fit this lock, I'm out of here. Then you're free, right?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, I really, really do appreciate the call. I have another one coming up, so I will stop here. But I really do appreciate the courage it takes to come in and talk about these issues. And I really do appreciate that wild story. And I hope that you will let me know how things go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your time. And I will keep you up to date.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
All right. You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.